Kovacic from Cambridge, who's worked over the last several years has helped crack open some of Bill's conjectures, and he'll tell us, I hope, what's next along those lines.
Wow. Thank you. Thank you for the invitation. And I actually never met Bill Thurston, but I had lots of email correspondence with him in the last several years. And, well, one thing I'm really grateful for to him is that he asks so many insightful questions that I enjoyed working on over all these years. And occasionally I was successful, which helped me a lot. So I'll be talking about, for the most part, for the first part of the talk, which is probably the main part, I'll talk about my, well, current joint work with Yi Liu, who was already mentioned yesterday in Danny Wise's talk, and this is all building up on my work with Jeremy Kahn, of course. And maybe at the end of the towards the end of the lecture, I'd like to say something about what we want to do next and what kind of open problems we're planning to work on. So, well, one thing that after we have proven the surface subgroup conjecture and then the error price conjecture, we were wondering what is the three-dimensional version of the error price conjecture. Well, such a thing doesn't really exist, but we felt that the techniques we use there should be useful there as well. And, well, as you see, the first thing and the main thing I want to mention this today is about how to extend these surface subgroup techniques, error price techniques, to not just build surfaces inside of three manifolds, but also to build surfaces in prescribed homology classes. So then I will mention briefly why is that useful and maybe even important through some very recent applications of these methods to some known problems in three-dimensional topology. And then I'll talk about some possible further work that we want to do. Okay, so unlike other people who use Beamer, I'm not going to keep the suspense. You can see the entire slides at once. So, you know, I think that's better because although you sort of cannot see what they're telling you, but you kind of can see. And then I spend my time just trying to decode what's on the part that's not seen. It's just human nature, maybe. Anyhow, well, so this is the question this kind of homology of three manifolds, of curves and surfaces in three manifolds, my interest in this came from two directions. One is paper of Danny Calagheri from a few years ago. And the second one is a question by Bill Thurston that he asked me 2 or 3 years ago. And so we want to answer those questions today. Say something about that. So, well, the question is very clear there. So if you start with a curve or a collection of multi-curves, if you like, in a three-manifold that's homologically trivial, the question is, does it bound a pi 1 injective surface? So, of course, it always bounds on a singular surface. That's just definition of homology. But then you ask, can I refine this surface in some way? And probably the best thing you can ask is, can I actually get it to be pi 1 injective? Because then it might have other topological importance and applications. And you can ask the same thing on a surface. And that is, in fact, what Danny Calagheri has been studying, who he was studying that question. Well, it's also there. And, well, we should always, well, first of all, the answer is no, because there is a certain obstruction for that to happen. And in fact, one thing that Yi Liu and I essentially proved is that this is a non-trivial Z2 obstruction, which I will talk about later. But we should be aware of this obstruction. And, however, at least in the case of, well, in the case of surfaces, then it's shown that if you take appropriate power of this curve, you actually, this curve will bound an immersed surface inside of your Riemann surface. And I will say actually a few words about his proof, because it is kind of relevant to what's coming later. His proof is actually computer assisted, and it is difficult proof. And I was able, well, Jeremy and I were thinking about this years ago, and I think we can decode from his theorem that 12 gamma always bounds an immersed surface. But I don't think you can do better than that from his argument. It has to do with his method. So I think I tried to just now to draw a curve to tell you why a homologically trivial curve does not have to bound an immersed surface in a Riemann surface. The Z2 obstruction is the self-intersection number. So if the self-intersection number of the curve, which is homologically trivial, is odd, then it cannot bound an immersed surface, because the immersed surface would always stay on the same side of the curve, and that would be violated at the point. So if you just have, for example, one intersection, I believe this is a homologically trivial curve with one self-intersection. So this guy won't bound, but the twice this guy will bound. Of course, if the curve is embedded like the red one, which is homologically trivial, then it's going to bound, obviously, an immersed subsurface. Well, both to the left and right, it separates the surface. But the question is really interesting and deeper: what if the curve is not embedded, but just immersed in the surface? Does it bound an immersed surface in that case? So these are not simple closed curves. So we have worked for three manifolds, but the method we have really works in the case of Riemann surfaces as well, but it's actually harder to work for Riemann surfaces. And so we show that essentially every homologically trivial multi-curve in a hyperbolic three-manifold bounds an oriented pi 1 injective surface. And in fact, providing that this invariant is zero. So this invariant that will come up later is additive, and therefore if you take twice the curve, then it will bound an immersed surface always. I'm not 100% sure how to describe kind of topologically this invariant in dimension 3, but it's something like if you start with a homologically trivial surface and look at the singular surface, if this singular surface is oriented, providing that we can define that properly, then the invariant will be zero. And if it's not oriented, then it won't be zero. But so this subsurface, well, that's just an addition, can be chosen to be nearly geodesic, which is really how you are able to check that the surface is actually pi 1 injective. So I'll get back to that, but the second result with Liu I want to mention is actually arose from the question of Thurston, and it was a question, I'm not sure that it has some applications, but it's sort of more of a curiosity. I would certainly describe it that way. It says that, so if we know in manifolds of negative curvature, each homotopy class can be realized by a geodesic, a unique geodesic, really. And now, when you look at, if instead of curves you map surfaces inside of manifolds, then this is a much kind of a more complicated question: what are kind of representatives you can get? Obviously, minimal surfaces are some kind of representatives that are of importance. But this question was in a different direction. It says that if I fix a homology class, second homology class, then the question is, can I represent that second homology class by a nearly geodesic surface? So you cannot always represent it by a totally geodesic surface. That certainly is not possible, but this is kind of the next best thing we can do. The method for proving this should certainly work in all other dimensions of hyperbolic manifolds. But it is actually really interesting, in particular interesting here, because we already know that homology classes in hyperbolic tree manifolds are represented by incompressible surfaces, and then they can be either quasi-Fuchsian or fibered. And this theorem says that, well, one interesting kind of aspect of this theorem, it says that these fibered surfaces that you get are homologous to some nearly geodesic surfaces inside of your tree manifold. It should be said immediately that these nearly geodesic representatives have much larger genus, and therefore they are not embedded, because if they were embedded, they would have to be fibered themselves. So you can kind of improve the geometry of the representative at the cost of the genus. That's how you can think of it. So what is the... So I want to basically just say a little bit about how one can try to prove these theorems. And what do we want to do? Well, first of all, we have this homologically trivial curve or a multi-curve, and we want to show that it basically or virtually, which means some power of it, bounds the surface, and that surface is pi 1 injective or nearly geodesic in our case. So, well, that question is kind of a little bit too hard to start to understand, to try and understand at once. So let's kind of try to ask the right intermediate question. And the right intermediate question is, well, can I improve this singular surface that I already know it exists in some way that's going to be helpful to me to answer this question without necessarily making it essential at once? And kind of the concept that we developed, Jeremy Kahn and I, in our work on the Ehrenpreis conjecture is that what we want of this surface is to be panted, so that the pants that make the surface are actually themselves pi 1 injective and have some nice geometric properties inside of the tree manifold. So if you like, you can just start with a question that Calogeri studied in the closed Riemann surface and take a homologically trivial curve and say, well, can I, instead of an immersed surface, does this curve bound a panted surface? Which means a surface that's made out of a a subsurface of your original Riemann surface that's made out of pants, and the pants are mapped as in pi 1 injectively, but they can fold onto each other. So the surface that they make may not be essential and immersed, but it's panted. So this is kind of the picture. So what you want, you start with some homologically trivial curve, and you want to say it kind of bounds a panted surface, and then all these things close up somehow with these pants. So this is your curve gamma, and this is this panted surface if it bounds. So the pants are nice. I will say something in a minute about the quality of the pants that I want. But you can just think of them as being pi 1 injective inside of your tree manifold. But I'm not making any claim as to how these pants are glued to each other, and I'm not making at this moment any claim as to whether this entire surface that this curve caps off is actually pi 1 injective. So, well, this kind of leads you to a definition of pants homology, which is, or as for today, will be called panted cobordism group, because Yi Liu liked that name better than pants homology. But I think we might return to pants homology in the future. So you can easily define this abelian group. It's obviously abelian because you're just talking about the formal sums of pants, and you can say that two multicurves are cobordant, pants cobordant, if there is a panted surface between them. And in particular, a curve is trivial in this panted cobordism group if it itself bounds a panted surface.
So I don't mean this in a pedantic way, but just so I understand panted cobordism, am I right?
it is not completely obvious that the curve is pan-cobordant to itself. And in fact, that may not be the case. There may be an obstruction to things like that. I'm not sure whether it is necessarily, well, what I want to say is that what is not clear is that if two curves are homologous in the standard way, that they are pan-cobordant. But even, oh, yes, that's certainly true. Yes, it is. Oh, yes, so there is a way of, right, well, obviously, there is a way, which is non-trivial, to show that the curve is pad-cobordant to itself. So I'm not going to talk about it, but there is a way to do that.
But not in, like, S1 or S2, right? I mean,
not as one. No, because you have to add these injective pans. Yeah. Yeah, not in the way. All right. Well, it's an equivalence relation on curves, exactly. And it is clearly, if the two curves are cobordant in this sense, they will be homologous to each other because I have a surface, in fact, a nice surface. Nicer than just singular surface. I have a panted surface. And one question is, which is actually important for this work, is to compute these pans cobordism groups in the case of a Riemann surface and in the case of a three manifold, say. You can ask, well, these are kind of interesting cases to me. And one conjecture which actually we verified, I'm kind of making it as a question, but we do answer it. Is that whether this Pan's cobordism group or Pan's homology, as we like to call it, is actually isomorphic to the first homology, not of the manifold but of its frame bundle. So this is actually the case. And to compute this one, well, what we can show is that it is a Z2 extension of this H1 of the surface. And it's a, I think it's the other, it's a central Z2 extension, so it's the other one, it's not the trivial product. So it will be, there is only one other such extension. So I think that would be the answer, but we haven't really written that up. This, let's call it a conjecture.
What's the answer?
That this guy is isomorphic to the to the central Z2 extension of H1 of the surface. And there are two Z2, there is not the product one, but the other one, the twisted one, let's call it. Okay, so now we are getting analytical. So far, you could think of all these things just in terms of topology. Just pans are didn't have any other structure. In fact, I guess Thurston invented the name pairs of pans. Pair of pans, really, people, including me, say that pairs of pans are three-hole spheres, but no, that's not what he meant. Pairs of pans are three-hole spheres with a hyperbolic metric so that the end curves are geodesic. And In this context, so we want to, of course, use that language, but we want to sort of extend the application of the word pairs of pans, not just to two-dimensional pans with hyperbolic metric, but also to really representations of pans in other Lie groups, in particular PSL2C. So every such representation, these representations could be thought of generalizations of these two-dimensional representations, which are equivalent to putting a hyperbolic metric on a regular three-hole sphere. So, right. So I said some of these things here. Maybe it will become more clear. But anyhow, let me remind you of these notions of good curves and good pans. So good curve for us is you fix a small number epsilon and a large number r, and you say that a good curve is a curve whose length is epsilon close to r, providing that we are talking about the curve in a Riemann surface, and if the curve lives in a tree manifold, then you want its complex length to be epsilon close to R. And you can generalize that anywhere you want. But the idea is that good curves are what we really consider as curves of interest here. And then the pants are pants that are bounded by good curves. So that's all there is to it. And such pants actually will be correspond to injective representations, because that's a little lemma. Well, I'm just talking about one pair of pants at the moment. Pants, good pants are just not good yet. We are not there yet. We just have them at the moment, kind of living, floating independently of each other. Hi, baby. Right. So the theorem, which was I kind of made the conjecture on the previous slide, is that indeed this pants homology in the case of tree manifolds is isomorphic to H1 of the frame. So SOM3 is the frame bundle of the tree manifold. So this is, this is theorem with Liu. So Yi Liu was instrumental in proving this theorem. And so, of course, if you are interested just in this question up to rational coefficients, if you're interested in homology up to rational coefficients, then indeed, this pants homology with rational coefficients is the same as the homology of the tree manifold with rational coefficients. And the same is true for Riemann surfaces. This was proved by me and Jeremy for Riemann surfaces, actually, in our work on the Ehrenbreit conjecture. But this is just a little finer question if you want to work with integers.
Are there some quantifiers on the epsilon and the r in this
theorem? Yes, thank you. So it works for every epsilon, positive, and for every r that's large enough. And how large depends on the first eigenvalue of the Laplacian on the manifold only, but that's some other.
No,
it does not depend. It depends on epsilon. Yes, but yes, we always fix epsilon and then we think of things not depending on epsilon. But I want to say that you can actually take epsilon to be e to the minus alpha r, so you can relate epsilon and r, and that's actually important in applications. Not in this work here, but it's actually important. And you can relate epsilon and r in this way. Alpha is just some positive number, which depends on the first eigenvalue. So it depends how fast mixing, how good mixing properties you have on the frame bundle. Yeah. So, right. So you can observe this short exact sequence, which is kind of elementary. And, well, this is something we all, I guess, teach students. And then you get that this is the central extension I was talking about. Okay, so that's the computation, which should really work for, well, modulo this, but it should really work for Riemann surfaces too. I meant, yes, you're right, but I meant this alpha there. This alpha will depend on the first eigenvalue. But generally, if you just fix a manifold, then R will depend. Yeah, it depends. Let's say it depends on the manifold, but it will depend on the volume of the manifold. Let's say it depends on the manifold. This alpha will depend just on the first eigenvalue. Okay. So, let's speed up. Yes?
Can you describe a map in at least one direction? If you have an epsilon R curve, it doesn't quite have the lift to the frame bundle.
It has a canonical lift. I'm not going to say it's unique, but it has a canonical lift. Yeah. It is Z-mod 2, but you can choose one. There is no problem in choosing one. Important question. And in fact, that Z2 was a tip-off that something's not quite right, because we wanted to first prove the theorem without lifting. But then we had to lift it. Yeah, but there is a lift. Going back, I will say a few words about that in a minute, yes, as to going back. So what I was discussing with Kurt is this. So he asked about this isomorphism. How do you construct it? And map into this direction is is sort of more or less obvious, or at least if you the map if to, into H1 of M is obvious, and then lift is canonical. It's not sort of hard. But why you can go back, that's the whole, that's the hard part. And that's the Goodpants homology theory, how you go back. Let me actually tell you a few words about that, because actually it is important. And I'll just say it like this. So the question is, you start with a homologically trivial multicurve. Multicurve. And then you want to say that it bounds some surface made out of pants. And so to do that, well, this theory of Goodpants homology sort of was designed in the way that you can do that, not maybe if you can do that in an efficient way, which I'll just describe in a second, but not for all such multicurves, but only for a special kind of multicurves that are well coded by the fundamental group of the manifold. So there is this coding from the fundamental group. So let's take the fundamental group of the manifold and fix a base point on your manifold. And let's say that we are in the case of Riemann surface, just for some sort of simplicity. Then we have, actually it doesn't really matter. So this is the base point. So every element of the fundamental group is a loop that starts and ends at the base point. So if I have an element in the fundamental group A, then I have the corresponding loop here, A. And I also have its conjugacy class, which is going to correspond to the actual closed geodesic on the surface or the manifold. Okay? So there are two things. There is the element of the fundamental group, which is this loop, and its conjugacy class, which is the closed geodesic. And now, the claim is that the following coding takes place. To each element of the fundamental group, you associate the following collection of the following multicurve, which I will call AT, and it is given like this. So if I got it wrong, Jeremy would kill me. So you can explained, these are geodesics. These are homotopy classes, conjugacy classes of elements. So this is a multicurve. So I'll explain. A is the element of the fundamental group. T is some fixed element, which is a so-called buffer, which I won't say anything more about. It's going to be fixed, and it's going to be used just for geometric purposes. And B is any element of the fundamental group. You can choose any B. And you can observe that the homology class of this guy does not depend on the choice of B. And in fact, the Pants homology class does not depend on the choice of B. And that's our first main lemma, that this is independent, that the Pants homology of this is independent of B. Why? Well, without getting into too details, that is important because you want to sum up over all Bs and then average, but that's some other story. So what is important about this operator is that, and this is really the central step, is that XY T is in the Goodpants homology, or in cobordism group, equal to XT plus YT. And now you can simply, you start with any element of the fundamental group and go down to the generators, and then you basically finish your business there. So.
Is this an average mean, or are you using rational coefficients somehow?
Yes. The mean is you take all the b's with a certain nice geometric properties of certain length in the fundamental group, and you average over them. This is important because you want to do this not in this particular work with Yi, but in the Ehrenpreis conjecture. You need to distribute the pans that you are using in showing that you can encapsulate by a painted surface each homologically trivial curve. That's why you.
But I think Jack's question is, are you working in omega tensor Q now? Is this sort of the rational?
No. It's still with, well, it's, there is this one half, yes. So we are working with the rational. This one half is, it is somewhat related with that Z2 obstruction. I am averaging over B. That's all. I am only averaging over B's. I'm not averaging. A is fixed, T is fixed, and I average over B. So in fact, I'm just averaging over B.
Is that what the square brackets mean, is average?
No. Square brackets are denoting the conjugacy class of an element of the fundamental group, or if you like, the closed geodesic. That's what the square brackets stand for. The subtraction is in omega, yes. These are two
and
geodesics.
Is all in omega tensor Q?
Yes, let's say that this is all in omega tensor Q.
Can you tell us that omega tensor Q was in fact just plain ordinary H1, that the answering with the question.
But this is how you prove it. So
okay.
The question was that McMullen raised is why is that, or sort of how you do that? Can you say it 10 words? And I said maybe 100. And I think it was a useful digression, but I won't say any more because we're too technical. So the way to kind of finish the argument, once you know that every curve, the dispense homology checks out as the regular homology, the way to finish the argument is as follows. So remember, I give you a curve that's homologically trivial. And I have shown that I can actually, that this curve will bound the painted surface made out of these good pans. But I have no information as to how these pans are glued to each other. And in fact, I cannot provide one. They are glued to each other in all possible ways, in all fairness. So I cannot in any way check and verify that this surface I get is pi 1 injective. So what do I do? Well, I take a collection of all the good pans that I know that there exist, and by dynamical reasonings, this collection of good pans is equidistributed inside of your tree manifold. If you like, you can take one of mine and Jeremy's surfaces and take some huge multiple of that surface n, and then take that surface and take all the pans and just dislodge them from each other. Just basically cut the surface along the seams. And then so you take two surfaces, the painted surface and this other surface, you basically get rid of the gluings, and then you form this new collection of pans, C, which is obtained from these two parts. And now you reglue the pans in a way so that the angle between the two adjacent pans is, the bending angle is close to zero, or if you like, the angle between the two pans is close to 180 degrees. So you take, this is the whole idea. You just take, and this is how, so you see homology is additive. It has this additive operation. So if you have a surface, even just the following observation kind of can replace this. So you take one surface that's painted inside of your tree manifold and break it along the seams, and then re-glue it in any other way you like, the new surface just has the same homology class as the first one. That's what's being used here. Exactly.
Many, many, many. Exactly.
So this number two here, so in our original construction of surfaces in tree manifolds, this two here stands because you take each good pants with both orientations. And then you can get a surface. But the original surface Jeremy and I got was zero in homology because of that. which actually was a good news because you couldn't do any other way for most tree manifolds. But here we want to actually study this problem. We want to now be able to hit the right homology class. So we're going to use that zero homology part in some huge number and add to it a fixed part that gives me the right homology. And then I'm going to reglue the thing and get the manifold that I want. So you can observe here that this huge multiple contributes to the genus of the surface that you get. And that is kind of the price you're paying for the geometric control. So, yeah.
So, we have your initial multi-curve gamma. Is there some like lower bound on its length or something? I mean,
gamma is always good in here.
That's
it's kind
of the definition of good.
Yes, that's part of the definition.
It's
length is R.
It's not bounded. It is R.
Yes, it's R. R is fixed, and eventually everything will work for things that are large enough. So the second part, the second theorem, which was this question of Thurston, can you hit every second homology class, is basically proved in the very same way, but you don't need this good Pan's homology theory. So this is really easier. So the way you can do it is, So this is the lemma that I want. So now the question we want to answer is that I give you a second homology class, and you want to represent it by a nearly geodesic surface. So first of all, you take its representative, the Hockian representative, which is either, well, it's going to be either fiber or not, or it's going to be quasi-Fuchsian. But either way, this lemma tells you that this guy can be split into good pans. So it can be divided into pans. They are not glued in any nice way. You cannot make any claim about it. But, because we were yesterday told it's OK to lie in our talks, I'm lying slightly here, but not in any essential way. And this is not what we are doing in our paper. But I want to mention this lemma because it might be useful in geometry. So you can just think of the following problem. Given a Riemann surface, any Riemann surface, can you, and given any large number r, can you divide this surface into r pans, the pans whose cuff lengths are close to r? And this lemma essentially tells you that you can, what you really can do, you can do that on a dense subset of the Teichmuller space. But if you, instead of definition of good pans where all the cuff curves are length r, if you change that and require good pans to have the property that two cuffs are of length r and the third one is 2r, and if you prove this lemma for it, then you would provide a new proof of this Sauttel's theorem on the number, small number of eigenvalues, because it is known that Riemann surfaces that are divided into pans whose, with this property where the sum of two cuffs is basically equal to the sum of third cuff within some uniform constant, those pans, such surfaces have at most 2g small eigenvalues. So this would give another proof of it. I believe that should work. Yes.
So you took some good pans, some R good pans for a fixed R.
Yes.
And you made a surface out of them, so you glue the hyperbolic metrics together. So you're keeping that hyperbolic metric on the surface when you re-subdivide it in pans, or do you pull the new curves tight and bring them?
Yeah, you always pull the new curves tight if you like, yes.
So the geometry of the surface will change the geometry.
Well, you see, you should think of these pans living. Already you pull them, I always think of them as already their cuffs being pulled tight. So so when I glue them, I'm OK. I don't need to pull tight any further.
So the surface is changing back all the time?
Well, yes, that's true. OK, so applications. So the second theorem, I don't know of any applications where you can hit any second homology class. But the first theorem has applications. And there are two theorems by young mathematician named Hong Binson. So yes, there is his name. So what really the point is here is that this this basically capping off anything that's homologically trivial by an early geodesic surface enables you not just to make surfaces, but to make two complexes inside of a tree manifold that are pi 1 injective. So this is the whole point that Hong Bin was start. Well, this was kind of his starting point. So the first example of this is basically answers this question whether every tree manifold has some finite cover so that any abelian group kind of figures inside of its torsion of its homology. And he answered this question here. And the way he does that is that he starts at any tree manifold, hyperbolic tree manifold, and he builds a two complex. Essentially, he takes a surface with boundary, and then this boundary he glues to the circle with n to 1 gluing map. So you get this standard two complex that has torsion in the homology Zn, and that's how you can basically realize every finite abelian group. And then by using Egle-Weiss theory, you can the Lerf theorem, you can find the cover of the tree manifold where these two complex becomes embedded, and then he just concludes that this particular cover will have one part of its torsion part will be A, will be actually a direct summand of the torsion. So at least for abelian groups which are Z2, you can actually, instead of this complex, you can actually find a non-orientable surface, and then using, again, the Lerf technology and maybe some result of Alan Reed, you can project, I think, the whole fundamental group onto this fundamental group of this non-orientable surface, and then in that special case, that will give you another way how you can proceed. Anyhow, the second example of Hong Bin is this conjecture with a funny name, virtual domination conjecture. I actually haven't heard about this problem before I read this paper, but Ian Eagle told me yesterday that that was his conjecture. The idea is basically to construct a two complex inside of this tree manifold by using this kind of a Mine and Liu's theorem. This is really what the key part is, and then he's going to lift it up by Lerf. And so this is a beautiful theorem because it actually relates any hyperbolic tree manifold and any other closed tree manifold without any assumption on it. It says that every hyperbolic manifold has a finite cover that 2 dominates. It has a degree 2 map onto this other manifold N. And that is really beautiful. This 2 here has to do with the Z2 obstruction, and that's why he cannot get 1. So I don't know if that can be improved on. I guess Eagle studied this because he wanted to prove the virtual Hakian. That'd be my guess, because this is certainly a stronger result. But I think Hong Bin used lots of other work from the 70s, kind of more traditional topology papers, to conclude this. And Borromean rings are involved and many other things in his construction. I have another 10 minutes, so maybe I should not have rushed. But, all right. Huh? Oh, I have 15. Okay, that's even better. Then I can talk about what we want to do next. So I'm not going to call it what's next. I'm a modest person, I think, at least in public. I'll call it other applications. So I put up one question here. And so you can think about that for a minute while I erase this. Now, one idea is, what became apparent to me and others is that, it was actually known to people before us, but it occurred to me that this this theory of Goodpants homology and equidistribution and all these kind of things can be useful in other parts of our subject, well, broadly speaking. So I want to talk about potentially two applications. One is in the, kind of sort of related to number theory, although that has to be, number theorists would laugh. But that's there. Well, this is not a number theory conference, so I'll stick with number theory. Anyhow, so before I tell you that, yeah, let's look at this question. So really, the basic idea is you want to ask, can we extend these results about existence of surface subgroups to other Lie groups and their lattices? So you have a Lie group and a lattice in a Lie group. So this is a Lie group. And this is a lattice. And you're wondering whether this lattice has some interesting subgroups. For example, does it contain a surface subgroup? Well, now, you may wonder, well, why do you want to do that? And I also wonder the same. So we don't want to do that just for the sake of doing it. But since I'm here, I should mention that Ursula Hammenstadt has actually answered this when G is any rank one Lie group and gamma a co-compact lattice. She has shown that in that case, gamma would contain a surface group. This is particularly interesting, I feel, when G is the, when you take, well, the corresponding symmetric space is a complex hyperbolic manifold. Then it's interesting that these surface groups exist. And in fact, they're obtained by lining up nearly totally geodesic pans. There are two types of planes in complex hyperbolic space. And she's using real spaces to get this surface. So it's not going to be close to being holomorphic, but nevertheless, it's there. So what this question is about, it is that if G is in particular a product of PSL2Rs and Cs, so it's some product of these two kinds of Lie groups, and so what Neumann and Reed showed is that they asked this question as to whether every real number field, appears as a trace. And they wanted to use this one as the trace invariant field of a Riemann surface. So this is the claim to number theory. The number field appears. So this is an certainly very interesting question. And it's actually what they have shown is that the answer to this is yes if every lattice, co-compact lattice, actually, in this particular gamma, has a surface subgroup that restricts to be Fuchsian in one of the factors, one of PSL2Rs. Let's say the first one.
So gamma is something like SL2 of their primitive
integers. Exactly. So this is a kind of a standard. In fact, every lattice in this space arises from a number field in a quaternion algebra whose center is this number field, and then by taking some order and unit order elements, you can produce this lattice in this product. And now you want to find the surface subgroup. So it does not always have to be co-compact, but the theorem says that if the corresponding quaternion algebra is unramified, is ramified at least one place, then it will be co-compact. And the case you're talking about, when there is only one factor, is the case or for arithmetic surfaces or tree manifolds, depending. And in that case, certainly, I mean, it can happen that the lattice is non-compact. But yeah, I want lattice to be co-compact because then I can solve the problem. Then I think we can solve the problem. So, well, this is the generalization. I should say here, obviously, a much harder question is that if you have a real number field with a complex zero, whether there is a tree manifold whose invariant trace field is actually equal to that number field. I mean, you would then need a tree manifold subgroup of this monster that's a Kleinian group in the factor. Now that's a next level of difficulty. But people thought about it. All right, so one can, I mean, even to explain the motivation behind these generalizations, I formulated kind of an example of a question, is to say that when do you have a hope of finding a Riemann surface, a surface subgroup, I should say, inside of this lattice? When do you have a hope? Well, you need, in order just to do the basic geometry, you need a model subspaces of your Lie group. So you need embeddings, nice embeddings of PSL2R inside of your Lie group so that your surfaces are modeled that you want, are kind of locally parallel to this copy of PSL2R. This is, so when the Lie group is a hyperbolic, well, it's the isometry of the hyperbolic space, you, of course, have these totally geodesic planes. And then you're aligning pants so that they lie locally are very close to these geodesic planes. So you're kind of trying to do the same thing in general. And yeah, so this is certainly the case here. I do have my favorite PSL2Rs embedded here. And I want to align pants to say lie with, to kind of are nicely aligned with respect to this first component. The second question is even more general, and it is less clear, certainly from this slide, why we want to do this, but I just want to say a few words about that. So now, actually, I'm not giving this space X a name here, but Alon Lindestrauss invented basically this definition of such X. He calls it, in this case, he would call it PSL2R foliated space in his famous work on the quantum ergodicity. So you have you do need to work with a compact metric space, and you have a PSL2R action on this space so that the space becomes foliated by the orbits. And so then we can certainly ask the question of whether such a compact space would contain this surface that would be locally parallel to these orbits of PSL2R action. So why is this interesting? This will be my last slide, and it's interesting because of these two conjectures that are certainly of interest to many people. The one is the surface subgroup problem for hyperbolic groups that are one-ended, and the other one is the canon conjecture, which would essentially follow from the first one, if you can prove it for hyperbolic groups whose boundary is the two-sphere. So the point of this paragraph here is to tell you how to form a PSL2R foliated compact space, how to associate it to every hyperbolic group that is one-ended. Now, you do that by, and in fact, this is going to generalize the standard tangent or frame bundle over hyperbolic manifolds. It's just a generalization or straightforward generalization in some sense. So if this is the boundary, if you have a hyperbolic group, and its boundary is connected, and you can pretend it's the two-sphere, because that's certainly an important case, Then you have many quasi-symmetric mappings from the circle into the boundary of the group. And they will map the circle onto some quasi-circle inside of this boundary. Now, what is nice here is that the group acts on its boundary to the right by post-composition. So if you just take any quasi-symmetric map here, and let's give it a name F, then you can post-compose it by an element of the group. So you can post-compose it by any element of the group on the right. And on the other hand, the PSL2R acts on the circle, so you can pre-compose this by PSL2R from the, so this is from the left, now from the right. And so just, so if you take, so the reason this K appears here is because you want this to be compact, and also pre-composing by Möbius transformations does not change the constant. So the point here is that this space is a compact metric space simply because the action on triple of points is co-compact on the boundary. And then you have this natural PSL2 R action, and it will be, one can easily check that this space X will be foliated by essentially, or almost foliated, so it's a little tweak to the original definition with respect to the PSL2 R action here. Now, if this was a Kleinian group, and if you just choose quasi-symmetric maps that are standard Möbius maps onto the standard two-sphere, then this X would be nothing else but the set, but basically the two-frame bundle of the three-manifold. And this would be the standard PSL2R action on this frame bundle. So basically, this is just a much bigger set than the standard frame two bundle in this case. And if you can find, so the idea is really, and this is kind of some of the ongoing work, is the idea is to find a PSL2R invariant measure here. That would be the first step. And then by this phenomenal theorem of Moses, we know that immediately the action would be mixing. Every PSL2R action on compact metric space is mixing. And that gives an idea and hope to repeat the Gutpens homology and the rest of the theory to get the surface and to kind of answer these other problems. So this is the second thing that me and my collaborators, and that list is growing, thankfully, would like to do. So I think I'm exactly 10 to 4. I'll stop here. Thank you. I believe so, but that is the thin part there. You see, the surface subgroup theorem, the way we prove it, is not known for even cusp three manifolds, because this cusp gives you problems. So the thin part of the moduli space is the problem. So one has to deal with that. But I believe otherwise that one should be able to do. Now, not everybody agrees about that, but I'm not working on it myself. Oh, that's a lemma. It was first proved by Tukia, I believe. Or Bonk and Kleiner also worked on it, and their students. So, yeah, they do exist for every hyperbolic group which has a connected boundary. I mean, yeah.
Okay, I think we're reconvening a quarter after for the next talk. Oh, are there?
Organizers were not able to arrange for the use of the tea rooms during this break,
but the organizer did manage to arrange for sunshine as an alternative.
Oh.